This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hi there, Joysters. You are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9, and thank you. I'm not going to say thank you to Sammy for the wet spot. Thank you, Sarah, for the wet spot, and to our own Steph for the wet spot. Hello, Steph. You're back in the studio.
I'm still here.
And she's back.
I'm a new person
also
now.
Also tonight, James is here.
I am on
the panel.
Welcome,
for
guys.
The third or fourth week in a row, which is pretty good.
We're getting there.
And tonight, like most of the programs on Joy this week, we're going to be talking about youth because it's Youth Week. Although I was told that every week is Youth Week by somebody, but I think every week is Old Person's Week.
We
run the place.
Well, if you turn on the TV, and I reckon I'm just making this up, but if you did an audit of the people who you see interviewed on the news, I reckon most of them are not young people, especially the ones who were, telling people things that other people are expected to listen to or take seriously. The politicians, the business owners, those sorts of people, experts.
Well, that's because they've already succeeded.
Not like us. Actually, I'm not young. Sarah introduced me as someone who was not young.
Oh.
Well, you are to me.
You are.
Aw, thanks, Jim.
I have children that are older than you, Steph. I'm well old enough to be your father.
Probably. Thanks, Jim.
I'm not.
You make me feel youthful.
Well, speaking of young people, we've got a great show featuring young people today. We've got three guests today.
And they're all young.
They're all fantastic.
Sort of around 30 and under, aren't they?
Well, what is young? I suppose it is 30 and under, is it?
I think it depends on who you ask.
Youth is up to 26, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Officially.
Different people have different definitions. Up to 26.
This is my last year.
In the Victorian government, you get to be young up to 35. So I quite enjoyed that.
That's great.
So, yeah.
Let's go.
It's pretty relative.
It is.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Speaking of people who are neither horrible nor from AME.
we have on the line with us Elliot Costello. Hello, Elliot.
Good evening. How are you guys?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Very well, very well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. So you are the co-founder and CEO of YGAP, a not-for-profit organisation that drives social change through the provision of youth education and leadership. So can you tell us a bit about YGAP and, I suppose, how it came about?
And what does it mean, YGAP? What does that stand for?
YGAP stands, it was an acronym for Y Generation Against Poverty, but a bit like Oxfam and a few other charities, we've moved away from the descriptor, just branded ourselves as YGAP now.
Generation Y, is that what you're talking about?
Correct. So that's
the best generation.
A bit of a science.
Not biased at all.
No, not at all. But in short, we find and enable impact entrepreneurs in developing communities, working on a methodology where we fundamentally believe that local people have the best answer to local problems. And we work with 205 entrepreneurs across Africa and Asia. But I think what makes us unique, especially in Australia, is our fundraising. We're quite proud to have a very different model. We aren't dependent on traditional forms of fundraising, so we get no government grants, being state or federal money. We have no trust and foundations that fund us, and all monthly donation programs where we send volunteers to sign people up on the streets. Instead, we've got two national fundraising campaigns and three social enterprises that we own and operate, and that funds us.
And so do you seek out social entrepreneurs or commercial entrepreneurs in the countries that you work in?
No, they're all impact entrepreneurs. So they're all young people working on big ideas around agriculture, shelter, education, things that are health and hygiene related. So impact entrepreneurs that are coming up with solutions to really reform and change not only their community but sometimes their whole nation.
And who chooses them?
So we have an accelerator program in country called Spark in Kenya, South Africa, about to launch in India. Historically, we've also worked in Rwanda, Ghana and Cambodia. So we work on a model where we've got an ability to, through social media and traditional media, put advertisements out, get over 200 applicants, but we'll choose the best 20 and then take them to an accelerator program and provide funding to the best entrepreneurs that have ideas that are going to impact and why, in the community.
Why isn't that racist and imperialist?
Pardon?
Why isn't that racist and imperialist?
It's the complete opposite. A lot of large NGOs, their international development methodologies are developed from people sitting here in the comfort of Melbourne, Oxford, London, Harvard, New York. Our whole model is about how do we find and enable next generation leaders that are local, locally driven people to have answers to local problems. So when we work in South Africa, when we work in Kenya, when we work in Cambodia, every time we're working with a local person, just under that fundamental belief that local people do have the answer to local problems.
Is that, a challenge in terms of having something that is culturally relevant across such a diverse range of cultures?
Absolutely, but we're proud in country to have a local CEO, and they work as a sort of country director. So we're not sending white Australians over to South Africa to sit in Mediclu and come up with problems around domestic violence. They have no context, no training, no experience, and no lifestyle. So we are fundamentally driven by this belief that the best way to affect change in any community is to work with local people.
I mean, I've had a bit to do with development agencies, and virtually every development agency I've ever come in contact with has said the same thing. Oh, we've got an in-country person who determines this, but I'm still a bit dubious about Western people going in and making the decisions to fund and choose people who are so-called local entrepreneurs that are entrepreneurs in Western terms. Rather than how do you determine that they are entrepreneurs in their own cultural terms?
Absolutely, and you know, that's the scepticism that we're trying to change. That, you know, since post World War II, we've had basically every large international non government organisation that's done that model, that developed methodologies and gone to Nyanya, Rwanda, or Karachi in Ghana, and implemented irrigation systems that haven't worked. For us, it's driven by the sheer fact that a local in-country director will scan, run the advertisements, will scan through all the entrepreneurs and their applications, and then we'll be able to select entrepreneurs that are having impact. Look, we're not owning and running these initiatives. We take them on a part of their journey. Our whole ambition is to get them accelerated, provide them some seed funding so their journey can continue and they can get access to further funding, whether that's through governments, whether that's through investment, whether that's through other incubators and accelerators, that's contingent on the entrepreneur.
But isn't the most successful model in many of these countries a model that involves corruption? I mean, you pay and you get.
No, not at all. I think that's it's a very specific way of seeing things. I'm proud to have been involved with other NGOs, and YGAP included, we do not pay corruption. You know, just 2 weeks ago, we got told that to sign up a new entity in Kenya can take 6 months, but if we pay $1,000, we've done 2 weeks. And we said, we'll happily wait 6 months. So look, corruption does permeate right across not just the developing world, but also parts of the developed world. Unfortunately, at times, it can almost seem unavoidable, but the more honest the organisation is, I think we are moving to a space where it's going to be a lot easier to avoid corruption. It's going to be a lot easier to have good entrepreneurs, good development methodologies that do not have to go through certain hurdles.
We do have to go to some messages, but please stay on the line. If anyone has any questions for Elliot, you can SMS 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au.
Or Joy. Ring Robbie on the front desk.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hello, you are on Joy 94.9. It's 16 minutes past 10, and we are on the line with Elliot Costello, CEO of YGAP. Hello, Elliot. You still there?
Sorry, I am. Yep.
Excellent.
Elliot, I have a question for you, a little bit more personal. What makes a young person, do you reckon? We were having a chat earlier about whether it's it's under 30 or whether it's under 35. I think in Victoria, Steph, it was under,
depending on who you ask, up to 35, 26, yes. 18.
So as a young person, what makes you, how has that made it easier or tougher in your role?
I might be a bit biased to this question because I turned 30 last year. Look,
Does that make you young or old?
I don't think, defining yourself as young is so much a social construct around an age. It's probably just a state of mind. In the end, of course there's been battles. I started a not-for-profit when I was 23 years old, working full-time for PricewaterhouseCoopers and burning myself, at all stages of the day. And it was difficult, it was frustrating. People don't take you seriously. It took me 4.5 years working in the corporate sector to a certain degree break away and run it full time. And, we've gone from one staff to 44 staff and turning over a couple hundred thousand dollars to a couple of million dollars and scaling. So there's barriers, there's frustrations, there's hurdles, there's every wall that is in front of you. But I think what young people offer is a tenacity and a very open-mindedness that, at least to a certain degree, says, no, it's possible. I'm not going to be told no, and I'll keep fighting and I'll keep progressing, and one day that door will open up and the pathway will be there.
So if there's anyone listening who maybe is in the corporate world or maybe is in high school and thinking that they want to do some good in the world, what advice would you have for them?
Look, it'd be simple. I commonly tell people, just push that first door, whatever it may be. It might not be the perfect answer right now, but push that first door and then the second one will open, and so will the third, fourth and fifth. I commonly just refer people to the fact that just get started. Whatever your journey, whatever your passion, whatever your ambition is, just push that first door and the rest will unfold. Just sit and permeate your ideas without actually taking that first step will become very difficult. So I just recommend everyone to get started.
And Elliot, I assume that you are always looking for volunteers?
Yeah, we've
and you have a website?
We do, ygap.com.au, and all our initiatives, social enterprises and our credit fundraising campaigns.
So any young person that was listening tonight that wanted to get involved can go just to your ygap.com.au and push Absolutely. Volunteers button or something like that.
And we're about to launch our 5-cent campaign for the fourth year in a row. That's a great way for people to get involved.
Can you give us that campaign?
Yeah, so we actually found out a couple of years ago and pretty frustrated, like a lot of Australians, around the fact that there's $150 million of 5-cent pieces in circulation, and they're not much value to a lot of people, but we see a true value, and we want to empower that individual 5-cent piece by realising with 3 billion unwanted 5-cent pieces in circulation, which is $150 million. We launched a campaign in 2012, and year on year have run it every May, being the fifth month, and collected over 7.9 million 5-cent pieces, and in 2 weeks, next Thursday, a week and a half, we're about to launch our fourth 5-cent campaign where we're going to collect $300,000 worth of 5-cent pieces.
Wow. And so can you give some examples of where that money is going to go? What kind of things actually happen on the ground?
Absolutely. So we proudly work across Africa and Asia, like I was mentioning before. But look, one of our great social entrepreneurs that we've worked with is David Mumbawe. At the age of 13, like a lot of Rwandans, had to flee his country because of the genocide that broke out in April 1994, survived, pursued an education across East Africa and then in America, but commonly was so desperate to return back to Rwanda to rebuild his grandfather's school that he started in 1954, but his grandfather was tragically killed on the school site in 1994 during the genocide. And so we met David and wanted to help his vision. Over the past 5.5 years now, we've backed David, backed his vision. The school, Nendo Primary School, was ranked 38 out of 38 in the district. It's going to be closed down by the government. 0% of kids at primary school level were graduating, going to secondary school. So some major problems in 2010. And through the provision of a really good education program, teacher training programs, interns coming down from Kigali University, new classrooms, the school is now, in 2015, now ranked number 2 in the district out of 38, and 100% of kids last year graduated, went on to secondary school. So they're the type of ideas and young, dynamic people. David was 25 when we met him, and now he's doing programs right across Rwanda too. He's a remarkable, energetic man.
So, Elliot, are any of your programs specifically rainbow-oriented, LGBTI-oriented?
No, they're not. One we're leading, we're a non-religious, not aligned to a political party. We're secular in every sense. So it's open to everybody. And, each initiative, we work with different entrepreneurs that do focus on gender studies. We've got some great entrepreneurs across South Africa and Kenya that focus on, and Cambodia, that focus on gender-related violence. No program is specific in that sense.
I just wonder whether or not it's worth prodding you in that direction, given the situation in East Africa, but Kenya and also West Africa, Nigeria and Ghana and so on, where there are specifically homophobic laws that have been passed by governments. And I've heard from a friend of mine in Rwanda that the same sort of thing is beginning to happen there.
Yeah,
and Rwanda absolutely. Has now, of course, joined the Commonwealth of Nations, so it's one of the few non-British colonies to be a member of the Commonwealth. So there's ways in which pressure can be exercised on the Rwandan government and other absolutely. Commonwealth governments not to do this sort of stuff. Not that I've been seeing very much of that pressure, because Kenya's a pretty horrible state for gay and lesbian young people.
Absolutely. Look, we're not in the advocacy space and need to be transparent there. We're focused on development through local impact entrepreneurship. But there are some great organisations that would play that role a lot better than us. We don't lobby and put pressure on governments related to issues, but we support and applaud organisations that do.
It certainly sounds like there's a lot of really great work happening. We can put a link on our Facebook page if people want to find out more about Why Gender. That's facebook.com/isnothingsacred on Joy 94.9. Thank you so much for talking to us, Elliot. I know it's late at night, so we really appreciate the time.
My pleasure. Have a good night, guys. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Elliot.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hi there, Joysters. You are is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9, and it is Youth Week. Is that right, Steph?
It is Youth Week. Hello, all young people. We love you very much.
And you just heard Brandon Flowers, Can't Deny My Love. And Brandon
Good
Flowers
choice,
is the
Jim.
Very hot-looking lead singer of The Killers, and he's gone out on his own. And that's
on
his,
you, Brandon.
That's his new song, and it's actually on the Joy playlist. We've played a song from the daytime
from the
catalog.
Daytime list.
Usually we don't play daytime music.
Oh, we're going mainstream, guys. quick.
So we're not mainstream with our next guest, who I believe is Feng Hung. Are you there, Feng?
Yeah, hi. Jim.
Have I just called you by your surname instead of by your known name?
My first name is, Tan Hung. That's right.
Right, okay, good. I understand that you recently ran a forum called Migrant Minds. Would you like to tell us a bit about that and how you came to do it? What it was about?
Sure. Yep. So Migrating Minds was I was contracted to design and host the forum through Colourfest Film Festival, which is a film festival based in Sydney. And it started last year. I developed the project, and it really coincided with my own struggles with mental health and my desire to build community and build strength with other people from migrant backgrounds. It really emerged from that. And what unfolded was a series of short films being screened, Australian and international, followed by a panel discussion by some of the filmmakers, as well as academics and psychologists and mental health workers. So that was really good. That was at the State Library a couple of weeks ago. I think it was a really successful night. There were lots of attendees, and we actually sold out a few times. We released more tickets and it just kept getting sold out. So I think it just showed us like how popular it is and the demand for
ticket
this
sales
kind of event.
Ticket sales are definitely a sign of success. Well, Jim loves movies. We all love movies, so it sounds like a great event.
I wonder why I wasn't there.
So can I ask a bit about, was this about kind of getting diverse stories out there or raising awareness? Are there particular things that you, like information or ideas you want to get out there or have discussed about mental health?
Yeah, so it was definitely, I think mental health, you know, it hasn't, it's only been on the radar in the last perhaps 10 years or even less, and it's less common to talk about it in terms of like amongst POC communities, so people of colour communities. So we really wanted to have an in-depth conversation about why there isn't a discussion around this in like the mainstream, but also within our own communities, whether it be like African diaspora communities or Southeast Asian communities. So I think that it was really to push us towards having conversations within our own communities and with each other. So, yeah.
And I guess, what was there anything surprising in terms of, I guess I'm curious as well about different understandings of mental health in different communities. Is that something that's quite diverse?
Yes, I definitely think so. The way different communities approach mental health, you know, the kind of remedies and modes of self-care that we have can be culturally different. Even the language to describe mental health is very different in different cultures. And I think that came out a little bit in the forum. I think we also looked at, you know, the role of the psychologist in your mental health, I guess, recovery. And how it's very different. It can be quite hard to approach a psychologist because of cultural reasons and the idea that mental health has been very individualized as opposed to, like, community orientated or family orientated.
So are there very specific and different issues for young LGBTI people from migrant backgrounds, or is that just a sort of popular cultural misconception on the part of non-migrant Australians and other LGBTI people? Because, you know, there's always that thing about how you can't come out in a migrant community because it's not allowable, and yet some of the best coming out films that I've ever seen have been Taiwanese, for instance, and they've always been around, you know, how the mother surprises everybody by knowing and being accepting and all that sort of stuff, which doesn't seem to me to be that much different to mothers in Western communities.
I guess just from my own experience, it's like navigating family has been a big thing. And I know that family is also something that Westerners have to deal with if they're coming out. But perhaps it's also like dealing, like if you're religious, dealing with religion. In my case, coming out isn't an important part of, I guess, my queer identity, because I have to for me, family is one of the most important thing, whether that be chosen or blood family. And
so how do you identify as a young Vietnamese Australian, or do you identify as a young Vietnamese Australian, and how do you identify within that context?
I do identify as a young Vietnamese Australian. I identify as queer as well. And I think that there's a lot of things that perhaps is not ready to be disclosed to my family, and I think that's actually really okay. And it's for me, it's also about finding a language in my own mother tongue, Vietnamese, on how to navigate my queerness. So finding words that for me are queer enough that I can reclaim in a sense.
It makes me wonder whether there are things that I guess white Australians can learn from other cultures as well. Like when you're talking about mental health and family and community, it made me think that I know for some people who have mental illnesses or mental health concerns, that the community does come into it in terms of a lack of community, where people don't feel supported by their family with even something simple, not simple, but even something like postnatal depression being caused by their family not being supportive enough or people not understanding. Like, I wonder, if there's things that we can learn as white Australians from other cultures.
When you say learn, do you mean to have more of an awareness and a way to approach?
Other approaches or other language even.
And can they be adapted and brought into the Australian mainstream culture and become part of the culture?
Very good questions. I think there's firstly, like, I feel like to get to those, to address those kind of things and be open to hearing these different approaches, especially mental health workers, for them to be receptive to, you know, people of colour who experience mental health issues and dealing with them in a culturally safe way. Yeah, I think we need to look at, in the, I guess, in the health system, how the structures in place limit our ability to address these problems.
Are there hangovers from the from amongst people of your parents' generation, for instance, of the way things have been in Vietnam and and the way that they perceive developments in Vietnam now, and how that would impede or help them accept? Because I am an occasional visitor to Vietnam, and I must say that it doesn't seem to me that in either Hanoi or Saigon there's particularly any prescription against young queer people. They're on the streets. You can see them. A lot of the in the art scene is fantastic, because a lot of the art is has got a queer sensibility about it. But much to my surprise, the Vietnamese government, which is not exactly a socially progressive government, is it, has actually put out some feelers about same-sex marriage recently. So that is that having any effect on the community here?
I think.
Or do they just don't like it because it's a communist government and they don't like the communists?
Oh, well, I think a lot of it is tied up with, I guess, like, perhaps, perhaps things that have been inscribed in Vietnamese culture, like patriarchy, through different forms of religion. But I think that has, it makes it really hard for parents to talk about or be willing to talk about these things. And I've spoken to other Vietnamese queers and they've mentioned this as well, like, it is deeply ingrained, just like with any culture. You know, there are structures in place that are deeply ingrained in the mainstream that that do have an effect and have a kind of ripple effect across generations, and it's really about undoing that kind of effect.
Pang, I'm really interested because you do actually also have a zine, and I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. Zine.
Yeah.
Called Spectra. So a bit of a plug for that. I'd like to, because I had no idea what they actually were. And so what exactly is that, and how has that helped you gain more voices from the Vietnamese community and more broadly to help with, you know, help forming your opinions on these things?
Sure, yeah. Well, Spectra started last year as well. So it was a project I worked on over 10 months. And, much like the forum, it was a way for me to connect with other people of colour. I'm not sure if all of them identify as queer. Some of them do. So I did a call out on Facebook. Oh, first, I'll tell you what a zine is. A zine is kind of an alternative platform to a magazine. So the zine's like a shortened form, and it's more of a DIY approach to making a kind of visual form of media.
And it's online and interactive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's normally printed, but you can have online zines, but I like working with the print form. So it's really cheap to make. It's it can be really inexpensive to make, and it's totally up to the producer how they want to format it.
And you're the producer.
I produced Spectra. So I put it together by hand, so that meant like I'm a bit old-fashioned and I like to, like, glue things together. So
do you have to do all the writing?
Because it was a contributor's edition, so I got people to send in submissions via Facebook. So I created a Facebook event page and did a call out on the different networks I'm involved in. And then I got people I didn't know and people I did know from all around Australia, from Perth, from Sydney, from Melbourne. So that's been really exciting, and in total there were 19 contributors, and the zine itself features illustrations, poems and stories by different people of colour, just sharing sharing their experiences with mental health.
Fantastic. Yeah. Pang, look, thank you so much for coming on the show. And just if anyone was interested, so it was if they would like to find a link to Spectra, it's spectrazine.bigcartel.com. And they can
we'll put that on our Facebook page if
we
that's
will.
All right with you.
We will.
Yep.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Another fantastic young person. Have a lovely night. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9. It's 13 minutes to 11. You are on Is Nothing Sacred with me, Steph, Jim and James. And we are speaking to Monica from the Centre for Multicultural Youth. Hello, Monica.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good, thank you. Thanks so much for speaking to us. So I understand that you're involved with Shout Out, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Can you tell us a little bit about Shout Out?
Yep, so Shout Out is a new program that started last year, and it's a public speaking agency for, specifically for multicultural young people. So we've got, I think, about 25 young people from all different backgrounds talking about things that we're passionate about.
And what are some of the things that you're passionate about?
For me personally, I'm passionate about employment pathways, talking about multiculturalism, and in particular talking about biracial identity.
Why is multiculturalism important?
Why is multiculturalism important? Because there's so many people that identify as coming from multicultural backgrounds, particularly in Victoria. It's really odd to meet someone that says nowadays that both parents are Aussie or whatever you want to consider it, like Anglo-Aussie. There's always someone with a mix of Greek or Italian or, for me, Ghanaian or Vietnamese. There's always mixture, particularly in Melbourne. So having their voices heard in organisations, on radio, in articles, in the paper, it's just really important because we are a large segment of the population.
So, Monica, you touched on one of your passions being about employment pathways.
Mm-hmm.
Has it been your experience that people with a more multicultural background have had different experiences? Have they been, has it been perhaps more difficult or just different in terms of getting into employment pathways?
Yeah, I think generally for young people, unemployment is a massive issue, but it's heightened for people that come from multicultural backgrounds, largely due to their level of education and also English being a barrier. I know for some older Africans in my community, having their degrees recognised in Australia is an issue. They've done study overseas. I've worked with people at the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre that have PhDs in like astrophysics and crazy stuff, but they just can't get a job here. And then you see younger people that are closer to my age that can't get a job. They've changed their resume so many times and they've even had to change their name to a more Anglo-sounding name. And yeah, so a lot of some people would say that it's racism or discrimination by like HR staff, and sometimes it's just a matter of not having enough qualifications for that job, and that being toppled with feeling like you're being discriminated against.
There are definitely some strong examples of that, Monica. I certainly, on the show, we're a big fan of science, so hearing that example about someone with a degree in astrophysics, even if there is some, you know, perhaps a shorter pathway to contributing to science in Australia, I'm sure Steph and I, you know, would be huge fans of trying to make that easier.
Yeah, yeah. I know sometimes... things like visas can get in the way and but yeah, that's certainly very frustrating, I guess, for people. So
Monica, any good stories for us?
Yeah.
Tell us how we're going to resolve this, because obviously you're already on it.
I'm not sure how we're going to resolve it, but I'm pretty sure the Vic government just released a paper today about how they plan on fixing the issues, and I think it is about making it slightly easier for diplomas and degrees to be recognised in Australia, particularly for a lot of Africans come over as nurses, so that would be good if they didn't have to do the extra study once they get here. So little things like that, just to make things easier, because just because you're from a third world country doesn't mean that your degree is any less relevant. Yeah.
There are issues, though, in the health field around equality and safety and so on, aren't there, that need to be recognised and
oh, definitely.
And we need to make sure that people who are coming to work in the Australian health system or in any of the Australian systems have the same level of capacity and quality that those that are locally trained do.
But surely that's something that, you know, is something that should be a collaboration, isn't it? It should be something that should be encouraged and helped, I suppose. If there are deficiencies, I'm not sure of it.
Like that's just an example of things that I haven't actually applied for it myself. But if someone has to study for an extra 1 or 2 years when they've already been working in the field back home for like 5-6 years, like shouldn't it just be a simple test? Like there's so many, have to jump over so many barriers and whatever just to be able to work here. Mm. When in particular in some of the industries you're actually needing more people. Like, I'm not sure at the moment, but I know that, like, 10 years ago or whatever, you needed more people that were nurses, people that were chefs and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And I hear that you have been nominated for an award. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Congratulations.
Oh, we've got a celebrity on the show.
So,
can you tell us a bit about that award?
Yes, I'm going up to Brisbane on Thursday for the National Youth Week Awards. I was nominated for the Youth Leadership for my participation or actually organising the Afro-Australian Student Organisation.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So that's been a lot of hard work. I've been working on it since 2013 and I'm the co-founder, and it's really an organisation that's linking young African students together at tertiary institutions. So we're linked up at every university in Victoria, I think, except Swinburne. So it's crazy that in a year we've been able to achieve that. And we do programs ranging from, like, employment skill building to community engagement. So last year we held a mental health and identity forum, which I think is similar to what your last person was speaking about. So I got her name. But, we raised similar issues to what she was speaking about. And we went one step further and we held a session with Colleen Hartland, who's the Greens member for the Western Metropolitan Region. And a lot of things that were coming out were, because we are on this radio station, there were quite a few women in the group that identified as being queer and felt that they couldn't speak openly about, their sexuality. So we did want to have a forum this year to talk about those things, but then unfortunately it didn't happen because they didn't feel it would be a safe space. So I'm not really sure in my capacity as the president of ACE if we could do anything to fix that, but I'd hope eventually we'd be able to have open and honest conversations that all members in our community are free.
I mean, our previous guest did talk about how young queer people in the Vietnamese community are beginning to talk about this in their own communities, and how it's been a matter of finding ways through, you know, finding the right language to use and the right words within their native speaking tongues to talk about how they feel and what it means to them.
Yeah.
Have you had young queer people approach you at all in terms of those sorts of difficulties?
Well, it's just never spoken of. Like, you see people like, oh, I wonder if they are, I wonder if they're not. And there's this one person that helped us forever, and he was at least in his 40s. And whenever we did speak about sexuality in public groups, he would actually leave the room. And I kind of got that because it is such a small community. And if someone doesn't like you for some certain reason, which I think is silly, then, it just makes life difficult for them. Mm. But I like the fact that... So he's from a different generation, but the people my age are wanting to talk about it. But I think that they don't want to be like the token person that everyone speaks to about those issues. Mm-hmm. So I think as much as they want to be an advocate for their community group, they also don't want to be the poster child. So it's a really difficult spot for them. So if I could do anything to even bring the conversation up, like I'd love to. Like I'm wanting to learn more and more about the issues that young queer African people are facing in Melbourne in particular, but I do think that changes or just the conversation coming from Africa, like with the court case in Uganda, has helped being able to talk about equality a little bit more in our community. So if legal structures are acknowledging gay rights and that, so should people, you know, here. It can't just be a cultural thing. Like, our culture is developing and progressing, and it's not a stagnant thing.
Well, that's so great that you have this organisation where people can start that conversation and can start talking. And I guess as there's, yeah, more people coming over from Africa, there'll be bigger groups of lots of different types of people who can
definitely
meet each other and help each other.
Yeah.
We have to finish up. I'm really sorry. We have to be off the air at 11 o'clock.
What passionate young people we've had on the show, though. Yeah. Fantastic to hear of them.
And congratulations again, Monica, for your nomination for the Natural Youth Week Leadership Award. Yeah. Best of luck. And hopefully we'll hear that you've won that.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Thanks for having me on the station. And if you do need to have anyone that's from a multicultural background talk at your organisation or anything, just pop onto the CMY website, and there's heaps of lovely young, you know, people from multicultural background willing to talk.
Amazing. And thanks so much.
I'm sure we can link it for you as well on our website. But if everyone else heard that, then they can go there right away. Thanks again, Monica. You have a lovely night.
You too. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.